This is Mandy.
And this is Leanne.
And you're listening to Two Blonde Sleuths. All right, Leanne, I know I said that we would be back, guys, but we have been busy this summer. We figured out we probably need to take off for the summers at least a couple months because it's just so much going out of town and just kids doing this and doing that. All right, Leanne, I'm going to tell you a story that I know that this story, because you've been an ID Channel fan for 20 years now. It's the Ken and Barbie Killers.
You know it? Okay.
Maybe you've forgotten some of it, you think?
Probably. It's been a while, but I know that one.
All right. It's a Canadian case, and it started in the 80s, but it's a 1990s case. I watched a 4-part documentary on HBO. It's called The Ken and Barbie Killers, and this wild case is just, it's almost unbelievable, really. And the way this case ends up is just baffling. There are some very graphic things about these murders and assaults that take place, and I'm not going to go into as much detail because I just can't or I won't. If you want to know more detail, you can go watch the documentary on HBO Max. All right. Have you watched that yet?
No, I haven't watched it because I already knew the story. Well, you're going to tell me that, but maybe I should watch it just because, I mean, I'm pretty sure whatever I watched was on a 4-part anything. So there's probably a lot more detail in that.
It was.
I think I've seen a few different shows.
Yeah.
And an hour long each.
Yeah, it was detailed, but there was other things that I found that weren't in the 4-part documentary, honestly. And that was some things about Paul Bernardo. They didn't say that much about him growing up. And that's what I want to start talking about.
So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Paul first.
He grew up with a mom and dad, obviously. And an Ontario, Canada. And I read he had a sister, but then I read he had two siblings. And they said, for the most part, he was a normal kid. They were middle class family, except for that his father was arrested for child molestation in 1975. I guess that's not like a total normal family.
Do you go to prison in 1975 for child molestation, or are they just...
I really don't think you do. I
don't think back then they're probably like, ew, you're gross, but we didn't kill anybody.
He might have lost his job, but that's about it.
He was probably nearly as strict in the 70s.
Yeah, he probably just got a new job and then they just bebopped it along more And they said that when he was 16, his mom told him that he was a child of an affair. And that sort of is when his behavior changed. He was ugly to his mom and he would talk down to her as well as girls that he dated in high school and later college, that he just sort of, I guess, respect girls or have respect for women, maybe? Is that maybe what?
Along with his mom, a mommy issue. He has a grudge against women and thinks they're all bad.
Yeah. If his mom is, then maybe all women are. They did say at the age of 16, he started looking into neighbor girls' windows like he was a peeping Tom, which who knows where that saying came from?
You want to Google it?
You want me to Google it?
Yeah. And for those of you that, while she Googles it and don't know, that's when a guy watches a girl or a woman undress through their window, outside of their window. Okay.
It's going to be in my best search history now. That's upsetting, but...
What's a peeping Tom?
Where is peeping Tom from?
Where does it come from?
Yeah. The term comes from the legendary Tom, who was the one person who peeped when Lady Godiva rode her horse through the streets of Coventry to protect.
That has nothing to do with looking through windows.
I guess he peeped. His name was Tom, but were people not allowed to look? People in the town don't need anybody to look them, but to ride through here and don't look. You dare look. And only Tom peeped like one eye open, peeped like I'm looking at her.
Yes, I think so.
It's sort of weird.
I think, yeah, everybody was supposed to look away. It was like taboo or something. All right, so now we know where that comes from. In 1983, Paul attended the college, the University of Ontario. He was very popular in college, had lots of friends and girlfriends. That is how everything started with him. All right, so Carla was born in Ontario, Canada in 1970. She lived with her two parents and two sisters. She was the oldest sister. She was also very popular and pretty girl. Obviously, that's why they're called the Ken and Barbie Killers, right? Had the 80s hair. And they said that she liked working with animals, so she got a job at a vet clinic. She was working out of town for this job at a pet store convention in Scarborough, Canada. That's where she first met Paul. They met at a hotel restaurant, and there was just instant chemistry. I mean, cute guy, cute girl, right? They like talked all night, and then I think they actually hooked up, and that's what they say. And they started dating, and they had a long relationship. And it wasn't too far apart. She lived in a town called St. Catharines, about 80 miles away from Ontario, Canada, where Paul lived. He drove there most weekends, and he would see her, and her parents were good with it because they thought he seemed like a really nice guy. He did a lot of, I think, love bombing, right?
Yeah.
All right, so there, while they're dating, there happens to be in spring of 1988, there was a rapist on the loose in Scarsborough. There was a total of 7 rapes during this period of time. The girls would get grabbed from behind, and they never really got a good look of their attacker, but there was some DNA taken, okay? Just keep that in mind. So they started calling this guy the Scarsborough rapist. One girl finally did get a good look at him, and they made a sketch of him. He was in his early 20s, blonde, blue-eyed, looked to be a very handsome guy. And just so the attacks actually started out by just groping, and then they turned into violently sexual attacks. The women were raped as well as beaten at the end of it, of the attack. So this whole town's like living in terror. They believe that he's responsible for a total of 11 attacks of the Scarsborough rapist. They just could not catch him. They knew he had to live in the area, the profile that he was a violent guy. Just so you know, when Paul and Carla first met, there had just been 3 rapes. They were dating for about 18 months. And in 1989, Carla graduated high school. She always talked about her boyfriend, and he was always coming to see her on the weekends. The friend said that they did seem to fight and that she told people Paul was possessive. All right. First red flag, right?
Right.
I don't know if she told her parents.
First red flag. But I think that when you're being love bombed, you don't really know you're being love bombed.
Yeah, but when the possessiveness and all that starts, right? But I don't know if she told her parents because they thought he was great. He was coming to see her. He had, at this time, he was out of college. He had a good job. I mean, he was going to probably marry their daughter and provide for her. So they were just all about Paul, right? And so in December of 1989, Paul proposed to Paula, and she said yes. So they set their wedding date for spring of 1991. All right, so there's a side note. The sketch of the Scarsborough rapist, it was on the front of newspapers everywhere. It was posted everywhere. And the sketch looked so much like Paul Bernardo, his friends started to notice. And one even called the police and tell him. So the police, they do call Paul into the station in 1990. And they question him. And they think, gosh, this is a good-looking guy. And they ask if he'll give DNA. And he's like, sure, I'll give DNA. And they were like, this is definitely not the guy because he's offering up his DNA. Yeah. But just remember, DNA back then, it's a very long process, right? It's not like a quick turnaround. All right. So after Paul gets questioned right around that time, Paul moves to St. Catharines with Carla and her parents. And guess what happens after he moves away from Scarsborough, from the town? Yeah, all the rapes stop. You're getting questioned. You realize maybe you totally match the sketch and everybody that sees you in the town. So you hightail it out of there. You get engaged and you move in with your girlfriend and her parents 80 miles away. So he lived with Carla and her mom and dad and her 2 sisters. So one night in December around Christmas, it was actually December 23rd, Carla and Paul, they stay up late one night after her parents go to bed, and they start drinking with their little sister, Tammy, who's only 15 at the time. Tammy gets so drunk, she gets sick and is taken to the hospital where she later dies from what they think is natural causes. They're so sad and they grieve with the rest of the family. They said Paul was, you know, would watch home videos of Tammy and just boo-hoo cry, right? He seemed to be really upset.
Some of the trauma.
Yes. Then the couple, they move out of their parents' house and Paul bought them their own house. It was like a little cute kind of house. They showed pictures of it on the documentary. It was about a month after Tammy dies. They move out of the parents. They said that Paul is going from mentally abusive, like maybe he was possessive, things like that, now that they're living together just on their own, to physically abusive. Carla was said later that she would try to leave Paul, and he would tell her that he would blackmail her and say, I'm going to tell people that it was you that gave your sister alcohol and led to her death and things like that. And so she stayed with him, and she said that he did act like before they got married, he'd be joking and he'd say he was as far as we're a rapist. Joking, haha. And Carla, she still marries him, okay? Because they're just this cute couple. So 2 weeks before Carla and Paul are to get married in St. Catharines, a 14-year-old girl goes missing. Leslie Mahaffey. She failed to come home after a night out with friends. They were not sure if she was a runaway or not, because I think her mother had actually locked her out of the house because she wasn't coming home at her curfew a few times. So they just didn't know. They were like, very tough. She actually called a friend from a payphone and asked if she could come spend the night over there. And the friend said no. They weren't sure if she was a runaway, but they figured out that 2 weeks later, that she wasn't, her body was discovered in Lake Gibson by, it was either a fisherman or a couple that were paddleboarding. I read both things. Her body had been sunk by concrete blocks. And I hate to say this, but her body also looked to be dismembered. So it was apparent. Right. It was murder. As her body was being found, Paul and Carla were having an elaborate wedding ceremony on June 29th, 1991. Then in April 1992, so a little less than a year after they get married, a 15-year-old girl, Kristen French, was kidnapped in the same town. Her naked body was also found 12 days later in a ditch in North Burlington, Ontario. All right, Leanne, and you probably know a little bit of this, but this is where the story takes a turn. On January 5th, 1993, Carla gets severely beaten by Paul, and she goes and leaves Paul and moves in with relatives. She just starts confessing everything that Paul has done to her family. She tells them all this bad stuff about Paul, right? So they encourage her to go to the police, which she does. And first she tells the police that Paul is a Scarsboro rapist. That after they got married, actually, the night they got married, he told her that he for sure was a Scarsboro rapist. Okay.
And then maybe she tells the guy against him once they were married.
Yeah, maybe that is true. Maybe he thought she wouldn't. All right. Then she tells them about Tammy. All right. Remember her sister Tammy that died that night when they were drinking?
Yes.
While they were living there, Paul was having he's not raping anybody anymore, right? He's moved into a new town. And his sadistic dark urges, they don't just go away, right? He becomes fixated on Carla's 15-year-old sister, Tammy. Carla was not a virgin when he and Paul met. She had had boyfriends in high school, things like that before him. And he made her feel really bad about it and said, I could have sex with your sister, Tammy, and take her virginity since that's the closest thing to you. So Paul pressured Carla to help him make that happen. The couple came up with an idea to drug her little sister and Paul have sex with Tammy. That would be Carla's Christmas present to Paul, she said. That was so gross about the Christmas present. And that was December 23rd, 1990. That night, the parents went to bed. The couple asked Tammy to drink alcohol with them. Carla put her drug first in her sister's drink. They were hoping that would make her pass out. It was like an animal tranquilizer that she got from the vet where she worked, right? It did not knock her sister out, so she had a backup plan. Carla would use halothane. It's like where you put it the same stuff as, what is that called? That you put it on a cloth and you put it over somebody's mouth and it knocks them out. Like you put it on a rag.
Chloroform.
Okay, so it's basically the same thing. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to put it on a rag and hold it far away, just a little bit away from somebody's mouth, okay? And that will make them pass out. All right, Carla, she says they videoed it. She confesses all these things. All right, she tells them got so ill, you know, violently ill, and they got scared. So they called 911, and she's taken to the hospital, and she dies from an overdose of drugs, not natural causes. And she has chemical burns around her mouth, and they had gotten away with murder. So she tells about that, but that's not all, right? She tells them that... That's not all. So she also tells police that he kidnapped Leslie Mahaffey and Kristen French. He raped the girls repeatedly, beat them before killing them. And he also videoed this. They go and arrest Paul for all these crimes. All right. So the police, they know that she said that Paul's responsible for all this. And she does mention videotapes. They go searching Paul's house and they search everywhere. I mean, they turn this house upside down, right? And they never can find these videotapes. And they're like, I don't know if we're going to be able to convict him on just a battered, scorned wife's
bitter.
Yeah, what she said about him. So they're like, I don't really think this is going to work. The police, they need her to testify. They're still going to try, right? Even if they can't find these tapes. But they've got to have her, their star witness, tell everything, tell all this stuff on the stand. So they make a deal with Carla. And they say, like, if you testify against Paul, since we don't really have any great evidence, but hopefully your testimony will be enough, she will get 12 years for manslaughter, okay? Because she's this battered wife. She's going to get 12 years, and she signs a deal.
Okay.
In the meantime, Paul, he's got an attorney, and he tells his attorney where the tapes are hidden. The attorney thinks he's so smart, and he goes in the house, and the tapes are actually hidden behind a light fixture in the bathroom. Like in a hole in the wall, which is crazy. Okay, let me tell you what he does with these tapes. He keeps them and doesn't turn them over to the police.
Lawyer?
Yes, for evidence. He doesn't turn them over.
Yeah. Isn't it like unethical or something illegal? Unethical?
It's all that. It's all. Sure. I'm pretty sure it's all that. It's you definitely get in trouble for it. I don't know if you get disbarred. So this lawyer, okay, he's sitting on these tapes. Now, while he's sitting on these tapes, let me just point out, this deal is made with Carla for 12 years for manslaughter. The lawyer finally tells, after they've made this deal with Carla, the lawyer, it comes out, the lawyers had these tapes all along, okay? Because they're getting close to court, and he gets in trouble. He's off the case. He has to be off the case because he's screwed up so bad. So he gets a new lawyer, Paul, and the new lawyer turns the tapes over to the police, right? And when he does, they watch the tapes, and they see, and it's all there. Tammy, the assaulting of Tammy, the assaulting of the two girls, the rape, the beating, and guess who's participating in the whole thing? Carla.
Carla's all up in it, star of the show.
Yep. Okay, she makes that plea deal while he's holding these tapes.
She's a willing participant.
She is a willing participant.
Yeah.
This whole time. But there's nothing that they can do about it because they've already made the deal with her, right? So, and Paul says that he never killed any of the girls, that Carla did, which, and Carla says that Paul did. So who knows, really, you know, who actually, because the killings are not on the tape, okay?
Right.
But Paul gets a life sentence in prison, and Carla got out in 2005.
Found living her best life.
Yep. She got married to her lawyer's brother and had three kids and is a soccer mom now. Yeah. How crazy is that?
That is a little crazy. Weird.
In Canada, yes. Is that not like insane?
The other soccer moms talk about her like, hey, that's that girl.
Well, they said that they do, that like written letters to the school. And I think she may have changed her name at first, and then people figured it out. I think I read she changed her name somewhere.
I mean, I don't know how big Ontario Canada is for those little small towns.
All right. That's our story.
Yes. Thank you for listening.
Hopefully we'll be back soon.
Two Blondes Loose out.